Katie Child on Radio Redhill.
Radio Redhill.
And welcome to Out and About with me, Katie Child, here on Radio Redhill. Now, on today's episode, Dave King visited Reigate School of Art when they were presented with a very special scroll. But first, I discovered why walking with alpacas has become so popular when I met with Vicky Agar from Spring Farm Alpacas.
So when we go through them, you've just got to be careful of your bag.
Yep. We don't reach out and touch them unexpectedly as we're walking by. And
no.
We don't want our clothing doing it either.
No.
Now, we can walk through and nudge past them, but what we don't want to be doing is moving them out of the way with our hands.
No.
Hands
no.
are what, particularly with more hypersensitive animals, start making them throw kicks.
Right.
And ours aren't kicky.
No.
So they all have good manners.
Yeah.
So we're just about to walk through the alpacas. Excuse me, boys. So the boys are waiting to go back out to their field, and you can sort of hear from their voices that they think it's time.
They're sort of murmuring, aren't they?
Yeah.
I didn't really know what sound alpacas made until now.
They don't really make a big variety of noises. This is a sort of a whingy. Isn't it time to go back out to our field for the night now?
Mm-hmm.
But generally, we call it more of a background noise. It's an infrequent noise where I think it helps them recognise that they've got their herds around them,
mm-hmm.
so that when they're grazing, they don't have to lift their head up and look all of the time.
Ah, right.
So when they have more of an emotional response, such as, is it time to go back out to our field? They start to hum with a greater frequency and sometimes louder and higher pitched.
And what other kind of noises do they make?
They make an alarm call, so if they saw a fox or a strange dog or an animal that they didn't know sort of lurking in the field, they make a noise. We call it a bit like a demented donkey.
It's
no insult to donkeys. It is a sort of repetitive, high-pitched noise that sounds like the battery's going flat.
Oh, right.
I have got a recording somewhere of one. But they only do it if something frightens them, and it calls the whole herd to alert, and then they all start looking accusingly around themselves to see what it is that's frightened one of them. In this group here, we have a male called Truffle. His name is because he looks like a box of chocolates.
Aww.
That's him over there. He's a grey but very multicoloured fleeced alpaca.
Oh, yes, he's got grey and black and cream, all sorts, doesn't he?
He's every colour, absolutely. And he is our lookout alpaca in this group. So if he sees something, he'll start alarm calling. But actually, rather laughably, quite a lot of the time, the other alpacas look at him and go, oh, it's just Truffle.
Oh.
Let's not worry. And they hardly react.
Aww. So there must be a hierarchy amongst the herd, would you call it?
Yes, in a sense. I think that there are so many parallels to humans. I think we all know that when we're younger, we often get told off by other people. As we get older, we become a little bit more assertive if we're confident
mm-hmm.
as people. It's very much the same with alpacas. So if they're at feeding time, we don't tend to feed a five-year-old boy with a one-year-old boy, because the five-year-old boy will tell the one-year-old off and go and steal all of his food as well.
Mm.
So basically, when we feed them, on our farm of almost 100 animals, we feed everyone as an individual, either in a pen or with its own food bucket, and we feed groups of equal sort of status together, so we're not having the bossy, greedier, older alpacas or llamas pushing all of the others off their food.
We've got a very, very inquisitive one here, haven't we?
This is Yuri.
Hello, Yuri.
And Yuri's just sniffing my clothing. He's probably looking to see if I've got any food, but he's nibbling me now. We don't tend to over-treat them, because as luxury fibre animals, we want them to have beautiful fleeces. And if we overfeed them, then we can coarsen their fibre. This is a very similar looking boy called Aramis. And these two boys are brothers.
They're both lovely chestnut colours.
A lovely, rich chestnut brown. And, of course, our microphones are One is big foam and one is sort of fluffy, and it looks a little bit like an alpaca. So they are always absolutely guaranteed to come, and they're all standing around us sniffing us now.
They've got lovely fluffy ears, don't they?
Can you see I've got a llama behind me?
Oh yeah.
Now this is a young llama. He's a lot younger than those two alpacas that have been sniffing us, but he's considerably bigger.
He is, isn't he? Now, is that the main difference between llamas and alpacas, the size?
Size is a very fundamental difference, but if you look at his ears as he looks away from us, you can see that they're asymmetric and banana-shaped.
Oh, yes.
We always say, think llama, banana. Llamas have banana-shaped ears. They have a way of looking like they're stalking around the yard. Their back seems straighter because the tail comes out at the end of the back, and they tend to walk with it sort of lifted or cocked in the air. If you look at all of the alpacas, they have a gently sloping rump and their tail is always tucked down the back of their thighs, so it sort of seems to be tucked around their bottom. And against most people's feelings of or expectations, llamas, they are the calmer of the two. They're bigger, calmer animals.
Oh, right.
Alpacas are a lot more timid.
Oh, I'm being nibbled.
And more easily frightened. You've got Renegade.
Hello,
if you turn
Renegade
around, he will give you a little bit of a sniff on your face.
Hello,
he loves people.
He was just nibbling the back of my coat then.
Sometimes they grab a bit of hair as well.
I felt a little pull.
So this is alpacas at their most engaging. They're inquisitive, friendly. They're certainly not the spitty animals that people think they are. But they can sometimes seem more like that if they're managed differently to the way people like us manage them. We're very calm and quiet and respectful with them.
That seems like a good way of doing it.
Our alpacas are very happy to stand in our immediate presence, knowing that we're not going to reach out and touch them all of the time, because they're not really animals that enjoy that a lot. And there are certain places they don't like being touched. So also, we are very patient and clear with what we want from them. Oh, there's a little bit of arguing going on. So we've got Rumour and Ziggy having a definite argument. Spit is flying. So against one another, they will get argumentative.
I suppose that's quite natural, isn't it? That animals will fight against each other, won't they? They will argue.
So one of the other alpacas got in the firing line of these two boys having a little argument. What I might do is I might just separate them. So I'm just separating them off so that I'm breaking up the little argument.
Stay there.
They're very socially distanced animals. They don't like other alpacas being in their, or llamas, being in their immediate personal space. And face to face, they'll always tell other animals to move away from them.
And of course, you separated the... what's he doing there?
We're looking at a llama who Nicole has just given a carrot to. But because there's been an argument going on, it's put him off eating it. So now he's dropped it out of his mouth. So they're one of those peculiar animals. When they've been arguing, they then can't eat for about 10 minutes. And if you can see, his mouth is being held open.
It is, yeah.
We call it the lower jaw being a little bit droopy. And he won't close his mouth and be able to eat again for about 10 minutes.
Now, I noticed that when the llama had his mouth open, it looked like he only had one set of teeth just on the bottom.
Absolutely. So alpacas have incisors, lower teeth at the front of their mouth, only in the lower jaw. They bite against an upper dental pad. They don't remove roots of grasses, so they gently nip off the grass and they eat it until they have a tummy full of food. So when they've got a tummy full of grass, they tend to sit down and chew the cud, a little bit like we see cows doing. They're not quite the same as cows. They're not true ruminants, but they re-chew the grass they've eaten. So they can be sitting quietly, but chewing. At the back of their mouths, they've got upper and lower molars. So they've only got teeth at the front of the lower jaw, but at the back, they've got molars, upper and lower, so that they can regrind their grass.
So just tell me about the two different types of breeds, because they're two different types of alpaca, aren't they?
There are two different types of alpacas. You have those that have a more ringleted style of fleece. It's a shiny fleece seen from the outside, and it parts like hair along the top of their back and falls like hair, but it's ringlets of beautifully silky, luxurious fibre. And the other type of alpaca has a much more fluffy style of fleece. It looks much more sheep-like, and it has the same crimp or natural wave that sheep's fleece does. It actually always feels softer than sheep's fleece of the same thickness. So we breed the alpacas for their glorious fibre, but we now use them for social pursuits like alpaca walking.
Which is something you do here on the farm, don't you?
We do, and it's genuinely wonderful to have guests here on the farm walking around and seeing the smiles on their faces. They have so much potential in wellness applications with humans, and indeed also assisting with learning difficulties and people with problems like being overwhelmed in certain situations.
What kind of benefits have you seen with people?
Well, we were doing alpaca walks some considerable time before COVID, obviously put an end to really going out for all of us for a long time. But throughout that time, we see just the impact it has on people. We get people who've never met animals before and maybe a little bit worried about livestock until they've met the alpacas. We get people who are dog walkers or people with horses. So we get a huge range of people coming to want to walk alpacas, a lot of retired people as well. And we have a lovely walk round our wildlife-filled farm. We farm for nature here, so our fields are full of wildflowers and butterflies and all the wonderful sort of life that we get on a farm. But more than that, alpacas are such wonderful animals to be around. They almost slow the heart rate down. Mm. They allow us to take a deep breath and just relax. And we get a lot of visitors from London here. The things people say to us, they really see the benefit and the enjoyment of what they're doing when they're here. So we take photographs of our guests and send them to them, and everybody is smiling on all of the photos that we send out.
I suppose it's a great way to kind of get away from the stress of the city, isn't it?
I mean, alpacas, as I say, have a huge potential for wellness applications with people, whether they're at schools or training agricultural colleges, things like that, or indeed with actually learning disability children and adults.
You haven't always worked with alpacas, have you?
No, Chris and I both worked in London and were lucky enough to go seeing wildlife across the world as part of our holidays. And it really gave us such an appreciation of nature, and that's become a huge interest to us. My husband's very interested in photography. So 26 years ago, we bought a farm with absolutely no knowledge. It is not difficult to do. You just need to be interested. There's so much ability to learn about farming in a wildlife-friendly way, as we've done. So we seeded our fields in the year 2000, and we now have beautiful wildflower meadows we walk through as part of our alpaca walking. So everybody who comes here gets an appreciation of what we've done and we're doing and why.
What would you say was the biggest challenge with setting it up?
I think that 23 years ago, when we got the alpacas, much less was known about them in this country. And so the biggest challenge, perhaps, was learning a little bit of their nature and why managing them, like perhaps in the same way that other livestock are, isn't always suitable for them being the calm animals you're seeing here today. They're a real treat for animal lovers to be around, people who appreciate how the reputation of them as being potentially slightly disagreeable, frenetic creatures, it doesn't have to be the case. So our biggest challenge was learning after 2 years how to handle them respectfully, more respectfully. Everything we did was kind, but sometimes we weren't knowledgeable enough how to handle them as well as we do now. They are such enjoyable animals to be around when they look cooperative and engaging, and they're easy to walk on a halter or load to go to a show or walk around a show ring. They're just lovely to be around.
Now, of course, we're here in the middle of the Sussex countryside, aren't we? What kind of wildlife do you get in the area?
Well, because our fields are seeded with wildflowers, we get lots of insects, and I don't necessarily mean ones that should worry humans. We get lots of insects. The insects attract birds. We've got lots of small mammals in our sort of tussocky grassland. So we get predatory birds as well. So every day we tend to see kestrels, buzzards, sparrowhawks occasionally, red kites occasionally, and very occasionally peregrine falcons.
Oh, wow.
Which is very exciting. We get regular sightings of foxes and sometimes badgers at night if we're out and about at night. And if we're very lucky, a stoat or a weasel. But that's really quite uncommon. And I don't think we've got many hedgehogs here, which is a bit sad. Truffle's grabbing the wire.
Is that tasty?
They are literally like children. They just have to nibble and play and mouth things.
Going for the bag now.
Trying to steal your handbag.
There's nothing exciting in there, I'm afraid. Oh, so they're quite charismatic, aren't they? It's determined to take the microphone off me.
You won't be holding that for very long.
No. And you've got 100 alpacas, you say?
Yes.
Over 100?
As of today, there are 100 on the farm. 100 alpacas and 4 llamas. I think people find it quite hard to believe that every single alpaca knows its own name.
Yeah.
But because we feed them as individuals, they have to know their own name.
Oh, right. Oh, that's very
we
good.
We take the trouble to put them in pens or areas so that the greedy... Chuff has just pulled the headphones off Katie.
Completely off. They've all got their own little personalities, don't
they?
Oh,
totally, absolutely.
Oh. So how long does it take to feed all 100?
All morning.
All morning.
Because some of the fields are a couple of hundred yards away, so we have to walk them down from their fields into the yard, put them in their places and feed them. So it's quite a process.
Yeah.
But it does allow us to make sure that they're all well as individuals. Truffle just can't leave Katie alone.
You're listening to Out and About with me, Katie Child, here on Radio Redhill. Now, Dave King ventured over to Reigate School of Art, where they had a very regal presentation.
It's just after now the official presentation of the King's Scroll here at the East Surrey College, and I'm talking to...
Hi, my name is Jo Fennick and I'm the Group Director of Learning for Reigate School of Art here at East Surrey College. So today we're celebrating the official presentation of the King's Scroll, which we're presenting to Reigate and Banstead Borough Council. Our adult learner students on the Heraldic Art Illumination and Calligraphy course have worked collaboratively on a fantastic scroll for the King. It's tradition when there's a new monarch to present them with a gift, and often from the borough councils. And our lecturer, Gerald Minot, was aware of these traditions, so he suggested that we should do this, and we raised it with the borough, and they were very keen to, you know, go forward with it. So there was a process of planning the design, and we have different students with different skills in the class. So some are expert calligraphers, some are good at doing coat of arms and the armorial bearings, some very good at the illuminated letters, initiated letters. So it was a real great collaboration between our students, and I'm so proud of them. They've produced the most stunning piece of work. It's absolutely exquisite. The painting is gold leaf and gouache, Chinese stick ink, and 24 karat gold leaf. And it's painted onto a vellum calf skin, which is a very high quality parchment paper. And then it was signed by the mayor, and then it was framed, and then we've had our presentation today. So it will now make its way to Buckingham Palace to present to the King.
It's a beautiful work of art. But I understand the crest at the top was actually painted upside down.
Yes. So because there were 5 different students working on the scroll, the vellum is very delicate and the gold leaf is very delicate, so you can't lean on any work that anyone else has done. So the armorial bearings at the top had to be painted upside down so that they weren't leaning on any of the work that had already been completed. So, yes, there we go.
Absolutely incredible. So, I mean, the East Surrey College is it's very popular and very much involved with the community. And I believe there are a lot of courses that could be people can enrol on.
Yeah, absolutely. Reigate School of Art has a really wide range of courses for adults. So there'll be photography, printmaking, we do drawing, painting, watercolour, as well as a range of languages and other sort of cultural courses. And that that provision is always growing and developing as well. So please, yeah, refer to our website and our course guides for the latest offerings, and come down and, you know, have a try and see where it might lead you, like our students here have done. So,
hello, my name's Lindsay Pavlon. I'm the CEO of East Surrey College.
What an amazing event today was.
Well, what an enormous honour. I don't think I had any idea when they originally were designing what was going to happen that we would end up at this point with the mace and all the pomp and ceremony that goes along with all of that. It's been an absolute jaw-dropping experience. Even down to the procession and the order and sequence of which we can say things and who has to stand where, but the opportunity to really celebrate the work of these students and the level of detail and focus that they have to have in an area which isn't really well known. It's been absolutely amazing.
And this is actually going to be presented to King Charles III very soon.
Yeah, we hope so. So it will now be transported up to Buckingham Palace, and we understand that then it will be presented to King Charles and Queen Camilla. And, you know, my aspiration is that I'm absolutely going to see this behind him during the King's speech next Christmas.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
That would be
I'm
amazing.
Looking out for that, definitely.
Yeah, very much so. If I can't have that, I might hang it in my office, the extra copy I've got.
Oh, you have an extra copy.
So we were gifted a copy on behalf of Reigate and Banstead Council, and the students who took part were also fortunate to receive a copy as well. And again, what an enormous privilege, because there's one and just a number of small copies, and they are holders of one as well.
Well, that's fantastic, and they deserve to be as well. I mean, the amount of work that's gone into this is a beautiful work of art.
I mean, the hours and hours of time that they've spent. I know one of the students said to me that, you know, they'd had to give up their dining room for the amount of work that had taken place and the focus that was taking place at home. So she was quite relieved to have her dining room table back.
I can imagine. What an amazing turnout we've had here today.
Yeah, and we're really delighted to welcome a range of people, dignitaries, MPs, councillors, mayors, and previous mayors. You know, it's a real honour to have so many people wanting to be part of this event. So thank you all for coming.
I'm Gerald Minot, the course leader at Reigate School of Art within East Surrey College of the Department of Calligraphy, Heraldic Art and Manuscript Illumination.
And you've been the sort of head man, if you like, on this whole project. Tell me about the journey, how it all happened.
I went to see our head of course division, Joe Fenwick, with the possible idea of achieving through the college and our students something in connection with the coronation of 2023. And it was an idea that we could have a connection with Reigate and Banstead Council, who we worked with before on previous projects. And Joe thought it was a marvellous idea that we should achieve something through the college for the local council. And within a few days, they came to see us, and they were most enthusiastic and excited with the project and all its possibilities, and it really went on from there. And in due course, we suggested that it should be a collaboration with a team of my students who are on our course, and within literally 1 hour, we had a team of five students who were very keen to partake with much enthusiasm and joy.
So it was painted onto
vellum calfskin, which is a calfskin which is prepared by a company called Cowley's in the Midlands, who presented us with the vellum. But it's a tradition that goes back to the Middle Ages in the preparation of vellum calfskin.
And the paint or ink used?
They were all quite traditional techniques, using gouache pigment, which is a paint which has opacity, which has traditions that almost go back against the Middle Ages, of course now processed in the modern age, but has links to paints that you would have found on manuscripts in the Middle Ages. It was using a pure 24 karat gold leaf on gesso, which is a mixture of glue, plaster and sugar, and then the gold is adhered to this slightly raised surface and then burnished with agate to bring its full burnish. Yeah.
Very specialised work.
It's very specialist work, and we're very pleased that we have these traditions still alive in our college, as it is in other parts of the country with many other practitioners still working towards these traditional techniques.
I am the Worshipful Mayor, Councillor Eddie Humphries.
It's an amazing event here today at the East Surrey College. What are your thoughts?
Well, firstly very pleased that East Surrey has hosted this for us. It's been a delight to actually meet the artists who have actually produced this wonderful scroll on vellum, and you know, to just understand and see it on the big screen was actually very impressive, because I know with anything, when you blow up something, yes, you see the mistakes. However, I couldn't see any mistakes. They were quite faultless, and they really did look fabulous. And, you know, it's very sad. It's welcoming to receive it from the college, but it's sad just now that we're seeing it going off to the palace in a way. But let's hope King Charles does put it on his wall, because we've framed it especially for him to do that. So.
Well, let's hope he does, and let's hope perhaps we see it behind him during his Christmas address. I do hope so.
Well, that would be delightful, wouldn't it? To have the only one, and it's such a magnificent piece. It would actually complement his picture, I'm sure.
I'm sure it would. Anyway, how long have you been in the position of mayor?
I've been in the position of mayor since last May, and I come up for renewal because I'm actually going to be the first mayor that's done it twice in a row. So I'm being renewed as the mayor in May this year, which myself and my wife will enjoy doing the duties and representing the people of Reigate and Banstead for another year.
So, excellent. And you're enjoying your time, obviously.
Well, we thought we were going to enjoy it when we first went into. We thought it was going to be good fun, but it's well exceeded that. We have met so many amazing people. We've been humbled by the amount of volunteers that are actually around, and we've learnt so much. The amount of charities out there, all doing different things, and hopefully what we've been able to do over our time is to actually manage to bring them to get to a lot of charities together and raise profiles. So not only for the Mayor's charity, which is the Lucy Rayner Foundation and the Royal British Legion, we will be changing our charities next year, for our coming year, and that we will be having Renewed Hope will be our new charity in May, along with the Kingswood Shetland and Friends. So that will be a great combination, we think, between the two. So looking forward to it, but it has been an incredible year so far.
Marvellous. Well, thank you so much for talking to us. I'm sure there are a lot of people wanting to talk to you here, so I'll let you go, but thank you very much indeed.
You wanted to speak to the mayoress, she's just behind you.
Oh, yes, I will definitely speak to the mayoress.
Hi, my name is Sarah Humphreys. I'm the mayoress of Reigate and Banstead.
And how are you enjoying the time?
It has been amazing, absolutely amazing. Far exceeding expectations from what we first thought, so yeah, it's been fabulous so far.
That's fantastic. And you've got another year after May, I believe.
Yes, we have. We must be mad. But no, we've loved it so much. And it was a real honour to be asked to do it again. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to starting afresh as of the 24th with a completely new year.
It's not far away now.
It isn't, but we've still got lots to do for the current year, still, yes, for our charities, and yes, lots of events still to go to. So
I mean, I was just saying to the mayor that there's an awful lot of money raised for local charities, and they're mainly local, aren't they? I think
they're all within the borough. Yes.
I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. Thank you very much for joining me, Katie Child, on Out and About on Radio Redhill.
Your requests on Radio Redhill.
Very good evening. Welcome to your Monday requests. I'm Nigel Gray.
And I'm Maggie West.
And we'll have a third person joining us very shortly too. We'll introduce her later on. It's all very exciting. We've got a pile of requests to collect, and some of them, some were collected yesterday and some today, of course. Where have you been today, Maggie?
I've been today on the Brook Ward, and I've also been on Copthorne.
Jolly good. OK. We're going to start in a moment anyway with one for June on Meadville Ward. We would like to hear Doris Day.
And then we've got Kareem on Charlwood, and we're going to give you another Billy Joel number tonight.
Colin Hastings, former presenter here at Radio Redhill, we've got one for you.
Tom in Medvale. We've got a little bit of REM coming up.
That's coming up in Medvale. Okay. Sherilyn Tilgate Annex, Bruce Springsteen for you.
And you're also on Medvale, and we've got the Hollies.
And Valerie on Medvale Ward, it's going to be some classical music for you.
Malcolm, you're in Tilgate, and we have a little bit of Whitney Houston for you later.
For Becky, and Becky, you're in Medvale Ward, we've got the Foo Fighters for you.
And Leonard on Brook, a little bit to do with John Denver for you.
And Vicky Smith, not quite sure where you are, but you've got Chaz and Dave.
And Daphne, you're on Brook, and we're going to be giving you a little bit of Jim Reeves.
And got another one for Colin here, Colin Hastings. He's going to be later in the programme as well. So all those coming up. Plus, you've got one more, I believe.
Yes, Alicia in Tilgate Annex. And we've got a bit of Nirvana coming up.
OK, and I've got some more here we're going to introduce during the course of the programme as well. Late arrivals, as it were. We've got Pete in Brook Ward, Amy Winehouse for you. Charlene in Charwell Ward, it's going to be Jess Glynn for you. And for Scholar, I think it is, in Capel Annex. And also Josephine in Brook Ward, some gospel music. And finally, in Tilgate Annex, it's hello to Jackie as well, Bobby V for you. That's all coming up over the next 90 minutes in your Monday requests. OK, shall we start? We might as well. Nigel Plummer came round to see us today. In fact, June in Medvale Ward, and we've got Doris Day for you. If you've got time at the end of the programme too, you've got Billy Eckstein on your list, so we'll try and fit that in as well. But for now, it's Doris Day, and great song to start off with, The Deadwood Stage.
Oh, the Deadwood Stage is rolling on over the plains, with the curtains flapping and the driver a-slapping the reins. A beautiful sky, wonderful day. Whip, crack away, whip, crack away, whip, crack away. Oh, the Deadwood Stage is heading on over the hills, where the engine arrows are thicker than porcupine quills. Dangerous land, no time to delay. So whip, crack away, whip, crack away, whip, crack away. We're heading straight for town, loaded down with the fancy cargo, care of Wells and Fargo, Illinois. Boy, oh, the Deadwood Stage is coming on over the crest, like a homing pigeon that's a hankering after its nest. 23 miles we've covered today. So whip, crack away, whip, crack away, whip, crack away. The wheels go turning round, homeward bound. Can't you hear them humming? Happy times are coming for to stay. Hey, we'll be home tonight by the light of the silvery moon. And my heart's a-thumping like a mandolin a-plunkin' a tune. When I get home, I'm fixin' to stay. So whip, crack away, whip, crack away, whip, crack away. Whip, crack away, whip, crack away, whip, crack away. Introducing Henry Miller, just as busy as a fizzy sarsaparilla. Ain't a showman any smarter, operates the Golden Guard.